And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show 24/7 on demand by checking out our podcast. It's called The Nick Craig Show. It's available in all of your favorite podcast apps. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Well, good Tuesday morning to you. Happy April 1st, April Fool's Day. PSA reminder to everybody, there's going to be a lot of shenanigans that you're going to see if you're a frequent social media user. Probably see a lot of outlandish and outrageous posts on X today and Facebook. I've already seen a couple this morning that had me going, what? Really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's April. It's April 1st. So be advised as you begin that throughout your day. But April 1st does begin the start of paid parking season at some additional beach towns across southeastern North Carolina. Ocean Isle Beach begins their paid parking program today. $5 an hour for up to 3 hours, $20 a day in Ocean Isle. Same situation in Sunset Beach as well, $5 an hour or $20 a day. And up in Pender County, Topsail Beach, $6 an hour for up to 4 hours or $30 a day. Now, many other local municipalities started their beach parking back at the beginning of March. That included Surf City, the lots there, $3 to $6 an hour. Wrightsville Beach, Premium Spots, which is seemingly the entire town, is $6 an hour or $35 a day. All other spots, $5 an hour, $25 a day. And down in Carolina Beach, same situation down there as well. Started on March 1st, $5 an hour for on-street parking. Premium lots, $7 an hour. Up to $35 a day. And, you know, I'm currently working on a story over at CarolinaJournal.com about paid parking. It's just outrageous. And I know what I'm saying is nothing you haven't heard before. But I mean, you do get to the certain point where it becomes completely unaffordable to go to the beach. I mean, you talk about driving out to Wrightsville or Carolina for a couple of hours. And it's completely unaffordable. I mean, one of the benefits, of course, of living close to the beach is the ability to go to the beach on a more frequent basis, right? If you live in Raleigh or you live in Charlotte, it's a 2 or 3.5 hour ride to get to the beach. But with the excessive cost of beach parking, and now, you know, to the credit of these beach towns, everybody's still there. I was over at Wrightsville for a couple of hours on Saturday afternoon, and it was packed. And so I guess the prices aren't turning people away. And I guess until it gets so expensive, the costs rise so much, and it's, you know, $15 an hour or something to park at the beach, and maybe even at that point people will still go. And I don't know that I necessarily have a good solution for this, right? You look at these towns, Wrightsville Beach more specifically, where there's very, very limited parking in the grand scheme of things. And you know, what do you do? Right? Do you offer some sort of local rate? That's something that I've seen tossed around in the past, the idea that you are a resident of one of the local counties, whether it be New Hanover, Pender, or Brunswick, you get a discounted rate at your for your parking at a local beach town. Now, the practicality of that is probably too complicated. The juice may not be worth the squeeze, but that's something that I think needs to be figured out. I mean, when you talk about going to the beach for a couple of hours, even just on a weekday, right? A beautiful weekday, maybe you're able to get off work early and you want to go chill out at the beach for a couple of hours. You've got to drop, what, $20 to do so? Just to sit out there for a couple of hours? It's not practical. It's incredibly expensive. And the interesting thing about it is the money is supposed to be only used for a very specific use, right? One of the things with beach parking is that the money cannot immediately or directly go into the general fund of the town or the city. That money has to be used to administer the parking program. And so the question is, why do the rates continue to rise? Wrightsville Beach now has Premium Spots, which essentially is anything that is beach-facing, that it's now $6 an hour. Carolina Beach is charging $7 an hour to park in their parking lots. That money is only supposed to be used to administer and facilitate parking and some of the road-style projects that are associated with with the municipality, the beach town, whatever it is. I just find it incredibly frustrating as somebody who pays taxes in New Hanover County, somebody who is going to, hopefully not, but there's a likelihood seeing your tax bill go up this year. You're funding part of those beach towns, right? You're paying for some of the services that they provide. Now, I understand folks in Wrightsville Beach, they pay their town taxes and they've got access to the beach. But what about the rest of the citizens of New Hanover County who do in fact fund Wrightsville Beach, who do in fact fund Carolina Beach? It's just not practical. It's not affordable to go to the beach. They've completely, and this is an obvious attempt by these towns to box individuals out. Now, they'll claim, well, there's already too many people coming here, so we'll continue to just raise the rates until it stops. It's just incredibly frustrating. I'd love to be able to go to the beach in the afternoon. I've got a very flexible work schedule, very fortunate for the situation that I'm in and the flexibility that I have with work. But I can't go to the beach 3 days a week. What am I going to drop, $60 a week going to the beach? That's just, you talk about a budget buster. Try throwing in $100, $150, $200 worth of beach parking throughout the month. It's ridiculous. Yet the rates continue to go up. There's zero indication that they're going to go down. I don't know what has to happen here. I'm not sure exactly how this process needs to unfold. I don't think it's necessarily government regulation. I'm almost never a fan of government stepping in. I don't know that I want the General Assembly to pass any legislation to deal with it. I just wish there was some sort of better alternative, better solution than what we've got right now, which is seemingly every year rates go up and there are less and less spots available, and it's incredibly frustrating. As somebody, as individuals that move to an area, many folks move to this area to be close to the beach, and unless you're fortunate enough to live in one of those beach towns, it is a significant amount of money that you have to dole out to take advantage of the public beaches, right? Because the beaches aren't private. There's no such thing in North Carolina. So there's my little soapbox rant for this April the 1st edition. Beach parking, good stuff over there. Rates continue to go up. And now some folks just say, yeah, screw it. I'll get a couple of tickets throughout the year. That'll probably pay for what I would if I was paying to park every time I go. So it's an interesting kind of discussion. But just a heads up again, if you are heading to Ocean Isle, Sunset, or Topsail, now, starting today, April 1st, those paid parking seasons are now in effect, and you'll be having to pay, feed the meter, or in most cases, feed the app, whatever various parking service they use to administer that program. Those start all the other beaches, most of the other beaches, starting on March the 1st. Taking a look at some news across the nation this morning. An interesting meeting yesterday at the White House, as I think I mentioned it yesterday morning here. President Trump's White House schedule yesterday, more EOs being signed, executive orders, and he signed one yesterday dealing with scalpers. This is the idea, the concept of individuals that have, and they're not individuals, they're entities and I would even argue enterprises that build bots and systems to go to ticket websites. The most popular, of course, would be a place like Ticketmaster, and they gobble up tickets when a new show goes on sale. They buy all of those tickets at face value and then immediately turn them down and put them on the reseller market, causing a huge supply and demand issue when it comes to tickets for concerts and shows, right? Major issue with that. So yesterday, President Trump was in the Oval Office with nobody else but Kid Rock, dressed up like Evel Knievel, talking about and actually signing an executive order dealing with ticket scalping. Let's run this audio and video yesterday from the White House. Take a listen.
Of course, sir. So this is an executive order, as you said, that deals with the ticket reselling business. For fans of live entertainment and for entertainers as well, the ticket reselling industry has become a huge issue. These people use bots and computer algorithms to buy up huge blocks of tickets and then jack up the price so that fans of live entertainers like Mr. Ritchie I almost called him Mr. Rock, don't have access to concerts the way that they should. And when they do, it's at exorbitantly high prices. So what this executive order does, it charges the FTC and the Department of Justice with rigorously enforcing laws on the books. In collaboration with state attorneys general that have power over consumer protection and other people who have the power to really crack down on this issue so that entertainers and fans won't be subject to these abusive and oftentimes illegal practices.
Now, let me stop this right there. I'll stop Stephen Miller before Trump begins to speak. Ticketmaster is in on this whole thing. I got in a lot of trouble in the past for talking about Ticketmaster and Live Nation. God forbid. They allow these scalpers to exist. They claim that they don't. But here's the reality. Ticketmaster doesn't care if a bunch of scalpers buy the ticket because their business is the exorbitant fees that are charged with the tickets. So when a scalper comes in and some sort of bot that has been created comes in and buys up blocks of tickets, those tickets are going to be resold. So Ticketmaster gets the sale of the original purchase and the sale of the resale. So they have zero incentive to block this. They are double dipping and sometimes triple dipping on tickets because they're able to make money on fees both times. There is absolutely zero reason that they would care about this at all. They don't care what the final cost is. They don't care if ticket prices are 4,000 times what they're supposed to be. Their business is the fees. You know, you buy a ticket, you look at a ticket, $21 to go to a show after all the fees are added in there, it's a $100 ticket because of all the exorbitant fees. Convenience fee this and box office fee that. Your $20 ticket's $100. So this executive order, as you just heard there from Stephen Miller, directs the FTC and other AGs to start looking into this. Let's hear from Trump and Mr. Richie, a.k.a. Kid Rock, dressed in some sort of American 250 garb in the Oval Office yesterday. What a great shot this is.
Good. Thank you very much. Bob, you want to say something?
Yeah, anybody who's, it doesn't matter your politics. First off, thank you, Mr. President, because this has happened at lightning speed. I know you put, I want to make sure Alina Haba gets her credit too, because I know she worked very hard on this, but thank you for making this happen so quick. Anyone who's bought a concert ticket in the last decade, maybe 20 years, no matter what your politics are, knows that it's a conundrum. You buy a ticket for $100, by the time you check out, it's 170. You don't know what you can charge for, but
facts.
More importantly, these bots, you know, they come in to get all the good tickets to your favorite shows you want to go to, and then they're relisted immediately for sometimes a 400 or 500% markup, and the artists don't see any of that money. And you know, ultimately, I think this is a great first step. I would love down the road if there'd be some legislation that we could actually put a cap on the resale of tickets. And I'm a capitalist and a deregulation guy, but they've tried this in some places in Europe, and it seems to be the only thing that's us as artists be able to get the tickets into the hands of the fans at the prices we set. I'll be the first one to say, and I know the president doesn't like when I say this, but I'm a little overpaid right now. It's kind of ridiculous. I would rather be, you know, a hero to working class people and have them be able to come attend my shows and give them a fair ticket price. I can't control that right now. So hopefully this is a step to really be able to make that happen. I know a lot of artists and a lot of fans who love concerts and music are going to be very appreciative of you taking this.
And I think Bob is more interested in the fans and the people that are having to pay crazy prices than he is the artist. Maybe the artist a little bit, but the fans a lot. I've spoken to him over the years about it, and it's been, it bothers him. It bothers a lot of other artists too.
So, you know, and it's an interesting point there that's brought up by Kid Rock, right? They set the initial ticket price. So let's just say $100 is what they sell or they announce that's what the sale price is going to be. They work with the marketplace, which is almost always Ticketmaster. They sell the ticket for $100. They get nothing additional on the resale, as I understand it, right? They are making money on the original sale of the ticket, that $100 face value. So if a scalper or a bot comes in and buys the ticket for $100, they get their cut, they get their proceed of it. Then the scalper or the bot resells the ticket for $300. I don't believe the artist is not making any additional money on that. Now, they might make a small percentage of the fee from Ticketmaster, but they're not making the amount of money that they are in the face value of the ticket. Now, again, Ticketmaster and Live Nation, they're getting rich, right? Because it doesn't matter to them who ends up buying the ticket. As long as the ticket goes back on the marketplace, they get their fees again, or maybe a third, fourth, or fifth time, depending on how many resales this ticket goes through before it ends up in the final person's hand that's actually going to go to the concert or go to the play or whatever it is. And you heard there from Kid Rock, you know, the initial ticket costs $100 at checkouts ends up being $170. And he's not wrong. And the prices are exorbitant. And as he said, it kind of goes back into what I was talking about with the beach parking. Yeah, I'm a deregulation guy, as Kid Rock said. I don't want government, in the way. I want government less in the way. But when you've got these entities that are acting in a way which is purposefully hurting the consumer, right? Because that's what this does. When they allow these third-party entities to flood their platform, to jack up the price, jack up the cost of tickets, the end consumer is getting hurt. And that's why when you look at the Federal Trade Commission coming in, which is supposed to be protecting consumers, when it regards to commerce and purchasing things, that's where the issue seems to take place. And I think this executive order makes a lot of sense. Now, how much impact will this executive order have? I don't know. I'm not sure it's going to, I don't know that this is going to solve the problem. And as you heard from Kid Rock, this is probably not the final solution to all of it. Right, there's probably going to have to be some legislation if that's the will of Congress and if that's the will of individuals that are allowing this stuff to go through. But this is seemingly a good first step. It's a very legitimate first step as to solving what I would deem as a major problem. Not only is the resale market a problem, the fees are a major problem. The venues suck. I got into a lot of trouble in the past for talking about my disdain for Live Oak Bank Pavilion because it's just an awful venue. There's no grade. We're talking about the land. There's no grade on the venue. They pop up this stupid-ass white tent in the middle of the grounds for them to have all of their sound equipment. You can't see over the tent. Everything in there is ridiculously priced. Not only do you spend $70 on fees to get into the show, you get in and beers are $17 for a lukewarm domestic 40-ounce can. The whole process sucks. Going to live concerts, going to live music venues is an awful experience now. I mean, it's just terrible all across the board. Live Nation has come in and bought up seemingly every freaking concert venue across the United States. They've got a complete and total monopoly on the concert venue system. These artists are not allowed to use any other platform. If the venue is owned by Live Nation, they are required to sell their tickets on Live Nation. They're required to have food and beverage from Live Nation. Live Nation's got almost seemingly a complete and total monopoly on the major live music venue industry scene across the United States. They don't care about the consumer. They don't care about a good experience. Now, I understand they're a for-profit entity, and I don't have any issue with them making money. I don't have any issue with them making profit. I don't have a problem with that at all. But it seems like they are trending into a bit of a monopoly, where they are the only individuals that are allowed to provide the service, the only individuals capable of providing the service because of what's going on. And at the end of the day, what ends up happening? Well, the consumer gets shafted. I mean, the service is terrible. Dealing with the website is awful. Getting to the venue is a pain in the ass. Some of the venues, including Live Oak Bank Pavilion, are just terrible places to watch and listen to music. The soundstage at Live Oak Bank sucks. The viewing angles are garbage. You can't see anything. There's chairs all over the place. You have to bring a certain level of chair into it, all for you to sit behind a white tent and not be able to view anything. The whole experience is just freaking garbage. And of course, I'll note that here in the city of Wilmington, New Hanover County, Live Oak Bank Pavilion, you, the taxpayers, funded the venue, right? You bought the venue. You provided the city through taxes, the ability to build the venue and then lease it out to Live Nation to charge you $300 for a hot dog without any condiments because, we ran out of those. Wait, that's the experience at a Live Nation venue. I love live music. I love seeing bands play, really enjoy it. I don't go to Live Nation. I don't go to Live Oak Bank Pavilion. The only time I've been as of late is when I've had free tickets. I'm not going to pay. I'm not going to go through the process of paying an exorbitant ticket fee, an exorbitant price to attend for a mediocre experience, which is exactly what it is. Now, unless you're buying the ticketed seats in the front of the venue, the rest is, of course, just general admission on the lawn, which is fine. A lot of great venues have phenomenal general admission, great lawn seats. You look at the what was Walnut Creek, the name changed up in Raleigh. Great venue for watching live music. The general admission tickets are perfect. The way that they've got the venue set up, it's like the amphitheater mix on the inside and then it spills out into the lawn. Great music venue. I've seen a couple of shows there. Live Oak Bank Pavilion is not that. It's a crappy venue to watch music. It was poorly designed and poorly executed. And at the same time, you have to pay literally an arm and a leg to go see a concert. So scalpers are one problem with it. Live Nation / Ticketmaster, another issue with it. Lots of very interesting things going on with that. I've got kind of a vested interest in Live Nation Entertainment, which of course owns Ticketmaster. It's the same company. So I've got a little bit of a vested interest in that. It really, really ticks me off that taxpayers built this venue and now nobody can afford to go see anything. I mean, you can just go, we'll do this on the show, Live Oak Bank Pavilion, and go and just look at the ridiculous ticket costs, the ridiculous fees associated with some of these tickets. Let's see if we could find a show here that's coming up in the next couple of months. Let's look at Brad Paisley. Now, obviously, Brad Paisley is a very popular musician. I don't even know if these tickets are on sale yet. Let's see. So lawn seats for Brad Paisley, $54.75. That's not terrible. $54 for a ticket. General admission. Brad Paisley is a very popular country musician. So that doesn't seem too exorbitant. We're going to add two tickets to my cart here. $54.75 apiece. We then go through the lovely process of getting the tickets in the cart, confirming the availability, and looking at everything else associated with it. Those $54, and let's see, I've got to log into my account here. These tickets, which again, face value, not terrible, not completely out of line. $54 is not the most expensive, the worst thing that you've ever seen for a ticket. And that's pretty typical for general admission. Right? It's not anything that's too outlandish. So now that I've got the tickets in my cart and I'm logged into my account, those two tickets there's a $30 service fee on them. It's $30 service fee for two general admission tickets, $30 service fee, and then $7 in taxes, which the taxes you're going to pay no matter what. $30 service fee. And actually, now that I'm looking at it, these tickets are $39 per ticket. So you are spending on the service fees for these two tickets, essentially the cost of a third ticket. Two standard general admission tickets at less than $40 is going to cost you $117. $117 before you're even in the door. And then you get to go through the lovely experience of buying food and beverage from Live Nation. The whole process sucks. I mean, I don't have any other way to put it. It's incredibly frustrating how unaffordable live music is. It's why, you know, going and seeing local bands playing at local bars and restaurants and some of the other venues. You know, Marina Grill does concerts out there. Sea Witch was a phenomenal venue. I know it's still open, but closing soon. Sea Witch down in Carolina Beach. A lot of great places to see music where you don't have to deal with this crap. Now, of course, you're not going to see Brad Paisley at these venues. Brad Paisley's not going to be walking into Silver Dollar down in Carolina Beach to play a show. But I mean, what is this? And this is not even the scalper thing. $40 ticket, $30 service fee. What the hell? Service fee for what? You can mouse over it. Service fees are shared between the parties that help make the event better. This commonly includes venues, Ticketmaster, sports teams, leagues, and promoters. Just charge me $60 for the ticket then. Make the tickets more expensive and don't charge me the service fee. It's absurd. Federal Trade Commission has already brought some, there's already a class action or already an antitrust or some sort of monopoly lawsuit that was brought against Live Nation back last year. That's when I was originally talking about it. And I hope it continues to go forward. This is just completely impractical for the vast majority of the American public. $117 for general admission tickets to Brad Paisley in Wilmington. And you might say, oh, well, Nick, that's Brad Paisley. Right, that's a very popular show, very very popular, well known musician. It's not just him though. I mean, you look at every all of these all of the other shows that go on there. I mean, you've got Kids Bop Live coming to Live Oak Bank Pavilion. Same process there. Go ahead and add those tickets to my cart, and see what the costs of what the fees are associated with it. Right, same situation there. $30 service fee. Two general admission tickets to Kids Bop Live at $39.50 ends up being $116.64. $116 for two general admission tickets. No seat. You're sitting on the grass. I just despise Live Nation, despise Ticketmaster. I would argue they have ruined the live music scene. They've completely destroyed the live music scene. And again, not a fan of government stepping in, not a fan of overregulation, but you do start to question and wonder, at what point does the Federal Trade Commission need to step in? At what point do some other entities need to step in and get this under control? Because what you have right now is not sustainable. It's just not. And I don't know, maybe I'm completely off base on this, but I've talked to nobody that has had anything nice to say about Live Nation, about Ticketmaster. Now, they'll say that they saw a good show. I mean, of course, at the end of the day, the musician that shows up, the artist that shows up, puts on a great show. But the venue in Wilmington is terrible. Despise the venue. And the company that you have to deal with to go is just the worst. All in all, it's a terrible experience. And I'll remind you once again, you, the taxpayers in the city of Wilmington, paid for the construction of that venue and then are going to get nickeled and dimed by Live Nation to go see a show. A $30 service fee for you to enjoy the show. It's absurd. Great work by President Trump. Glad to see he had Kid Rock all kitted out in his attire, standing next to him as he signed this executive order. We'll see what comes of it. We'll track the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you, if you are interested in getting daily show notes and more, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig as we head into the month of April. This morning, we'll be hosting another Patreon Zoom chat coming up here in just a couple of weeks. You get access to that plus the daily show notes and more content by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. On the other side, I've got a couple more things to get into this morning, including left-wing journalists in Washington, D.C., attempting and threatening to do a sit-in on the White House press briefing room because they're not happy with what the administration is doing. Plus, an interesting clip from Bill Maher over the weekend coming up as well. Those details as we continue on a Tuesday edition of The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live Tuesday morning. Happy April Fool's Day to you. You can be part of the show this morning by texting in at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. John texting in during the break saying, I'm glad you were able to get that off your chest. Live Oak Pavilion is garbage. I prefer Greenfield Lake for local shows. John, I agree with your comments there, and unfortunately, the city has given the same Live Nation contract to Greenfield Lake, another taxpayer-funded, city-owned venue that they have given to the likes of Live Nation, and I get it. I get that why you'd want somebody like Live Nation to administer your venue. They're able to bring the bigger acts, the bigger shows, because all of these major performers essentially have no choice but to work with Live Nation, right? Because they're the monopoly. They operate the venues. They own Ticketmaster, which is the ticketing side of it all. I mean, it's a one-stop shop. So all of the major artists work with Live Nation. Therefore, you put these local municipalities that, you know, in most cases fund and build these venues in a position where they essentially have no other option. And you and I, the end consumer, we end up getting screwed by it. I mean, that's the end result. So I'll keep an eye on this stuff. I've got a vested interest in seeing some of this stuff change. Not for any, you know, financial gain or anything, just personally, somebody that loves, you know, watching and going and listening to live music, just such a miserable experience all across the board. So we'll keep an eye on that, the executive order and some of those other details. Turning our attention this morning to the media. I caught an interesting clip yesterday that made its way onto social media. Real time, Bill Maher. I've had a couple of his clips over the last few weeks. He was talking about last week's hearing that took place on Capitol Hill when the heads of NPR and PBS were grilled in front of Congress over the way in which they operate as publicly funded media entities. As we went over last week, $150 billion or $1 million a year going to these entities. And the end result is very far left journalism, very far left reporting. Bill Maher had an interesting take on it. I wanted to play for you this morning.
The heads of NPR and PBS testified before Congress this week amid accusations of liberal bias. Should the government continue to send taxpayer dollars to public broadcasters? Well, a little background here. I mean, they've been after them for, the Republicans have wanted to get rid of PBS for as long as I can remember. This crowd will probably do it. I mean, I also read my namesake, Catherine Maher, was head of NPR, and, you know, she said, "We're completely unbiased. Give me a break, lady." I mean, they're crazy far left. So, I mean, I think we're past, my view, we're past the age, really, where the government, first of all, why do we need to subsidize? Why can't we have outlets like this? And we're so...
That's exactly the case. Yeah, I'm going to roll that back. But he says we're past the time where we need to subsidize. That's exactly the point. We're not in the 1950s or 60s anymore where there's the need for the government to subsidize these entities. And that's been my whole point. And that's been the point of the majority of people speaking against this on the right. In the current time that we're living, there's no reason for the government to subsidize it.
So, I mean, I think we're past, my view, we're past the age, really, where the government, first of all, why do we need to subsidize? Why can't we have outlets like this? And we're so polarized. These outlets became popular at a time when Republicans and Democrats didn't hate each other and weren't at each other's throats and didn't think each other was an existential threat. In that world, you can't have places like this, I think, anymore. They have to be private.
They have to be private. There you go. The comments there from Bill Maher. Couldn't agree with him anymore watching that unfold last week. We covered that in great detail. If you missed the show last week, you can, of course, head over to your favorite podcast app or check out the show on YouTube and Rumble and keep up to date with that. Speaking of media, got a very interesting headline for you this morning over at semaphore.com. Journalists consider briefing room sit-in as Trump clashes with the White House press corps. So I guess just like the individuals that watch and read their content, they are going to do a sit-in in the White House press briefing room because they're unhappy with the changes that are taking place in Washington, D.C. They're unhappy with the changes that the administration is making regarding the press. Well, that's pretty interesting. Now, before we get into the details of this story, is there no sort of self-reflection that the reason that the press is in the position that it is in right now is their own damn fault? I mean, is there no ability to do any sort of inward reflection and wonder why something like this might be happening to you? I mean, of course, the press is going to call foul. The press is going to cry boo-hoo that we're not being treated fairly by this administration. Meanwhile, Trump is signing executive orders in front of the media seemingly every single day, almost every single day, at least a couple days a week, signing executive orders, inviting the press pool into the White House to ask him dozens of unfiltered questions day in and day out. Yet it's not enough for them. You know, where was the media? Where was the White House press corps when Joe Biden was missing in action, MIA, for weeks at a time during his administration? You know, these, I'm supposed to think and I'm supposed to believe that these journalists care so much about what they do. They care so much about informing the American people about what's going on in the world, right? Democracy dies in darkness, the headline of the Washington Post. But they didn't have a damn word to say when Joe Biden was MIA. They had nothing to say when it would go weeks without hearing from him. Trump has given the media, now, not the media that they like, but the media, access to this administration more than any in the past. You have never had a more transparent, a more open administration than you have right now. Trump is speaking to these people on a daily basis. And if it's not Trump, I saw Caroline Leavitt yesterday outside of the White House hosting a press gaggle, talking to the media. And then, of course, after she was done making her point, they yelled questions at her and yelled things at her, and she responded back and forth. What is the gripe here? What's the issue? I don't know. Let's get into the details. The Trump administration's proposal to take over the seating arrangements within the White House press room has rattled the journalists who cover the president and left them mulling on how exactly to push back. Push back? Why do we need to push back? Just changing the way in which the seating arrangement takes place? Why did these journalists need to push back? I thought they were in the business of reporting news. I thought they were in the business of providing information to the American public. I didn't realize that they were activists, right? Pushing back on something, that's when you transform into an activist. The White House plans to impose its own seating chart for reporters in the briefing room, seizing control of the long management by journalists in the room through the White House Correspondents Association, which was first reported by Axios. The White House Correspondents Association's current system reflects the 20th century media power structure. Wire services and broadcast and cable television networks occupy the front row. Major newspapers and radio get the second and third rows, and a more fluid collection of news organizations sit further back. The White House proposal would upend the arrangement in a move White House officials reportedly believe will be a, quote, fundamental restructuring of the briefing room based on merits more reflective of how media is consumed today. And this, of course, is a huge issue for these outlets because the media game has changed. Right, we're not in the 1980s anymore, 1970s or 60s anymore, where you've got just a couple of options for news. You've got a couple of television stations in your local market that are affiliated with the big networks, NBC, CBS, ABC. Cable, of course, didn't exist or really wasn't super prominent then. Newspapers are a dying breed. I mean, Christ, the Star News gets delivered by the freaking post office now. Comes 3 days late with three-day-old stories in it. The newspaper's a week old by the second it makes its way into your mailbox. That's no dig on the Star News. It's just the reality of the situation. Newspapers are a dying breed. Radio stations all across the country, part of these big conglomerate groups, are in a really, really rough situation right now. Advertising is shrinking. And local television stations are in the same market. Right, and we've seen major changes to the media landscape over the last 10, 15 years. A lot of it started in the 90s with more use of the internet and the ability for individuals to get news, to get information around the clock. They did not have to wait on the 6 o'clock news to begin. They did not have to wait for the newspaper to be thrown on their front step at 5 o'clock in the morning. They've been able to get information now for 30 years all over the place, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's news that is being broken, and that news is being published on the internet. In more recent history, you've had the use of social media. Started with Facebook, then, of course, Twitter came along, and these platforms have become major aggregates of news, major platforms for news outlets and news entities and individual journalists to promote what's going on, to provide information to the American public. And so the old model of, oh, well, the only people that are important enough to ask questions are that of the major networks sitting in the front row or the Washington Post and the New York Times, that is an antiquated strategy. These outlets are having to shift and make major changes to compete in the times that we live right now when we look at media and the competition that's in media. And so the idea that the White House is not saying they're kicking anybody out. The White House is saying that we're going to change the organization around. We're going to change the places in which people sit. On Sunday, key members of the White House Correspondents Association, including the organization's leadership and some White House bureau chiefs, met to discuss a range of potential responses should Trump's communication office decide to dictate where reporters sit in the room. What's the issue here? Dictating? It's the freaking White House press briefing room. If they want to decide where people should sit, then I feel like that's their right to do so. I mean, we're not talking about putting people in a broom closet. We're just talking about changing where people sit. According to two people familiar with discussions, among the proposals raised by members was a potential civil rights era sit-in protest in which members would return to their old seats and refuse to leave them. These are the individuals that we're supposed to believe are unbiased. And these are the individuals that we are supposed to trust in relation to the news coverage that we're getting. They're threatening sit-in protests in the White House press briefing room because they don't like the seat that they're getting. Because their media outlets don't have the audience that they used to. I mean, you want to look at the root cause of why this is happening. It's nobody's fault. It's not NBC's fault that the media landscape has changed. It has. Technology has advanced. More and more information is available at our fingertips at no cost than has ever been in any time in history. As I talk to you this morning at 7:46 a.m. on April the 1st, 2025, there has never been a time in world history where more information has been more readily available to everyday individual people. It's never existed. And tomorrow will be the exact same thing. We are in an information age where this stuff is available, in many cases, at absolutely no cost to you. And so the landscape has changed. And with that changing landscape, well, things are going to happen. There's no reason to have what were the legacy media outlets that have now significantly less viewership than they had 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago occupying those front seats. You've got individuals that have online publications, online shows that have 10x the amount of viewers that some of these networks do. And so the fact that those individuals don't have the ability to get a front row seat as to what's going on, why not? Right? If the White House Correspondents Association should be thrilled with this. If their true goal and true objective was to have good, high-quality information leaving the White House press briefing room, they should be all in favor of it. But ladies and gentlemen, you know as well as I do that that's not the objective of the White House Correspondents Association. That's not the goal of WHCA. Their goal is to protect legacy media outlets that carry water for the Democrat Party. Their goal, their objective, is to protect the individuals that are fighting against this administration. That's their goal. That's their objective. And it's obvious that the White House Correspondents Association is nothing more than an activist group when they talk about doing civil right era sit-in protests. So they're going to sit in a seat in which they're not supposed to be, and then what? The police, Secret Service are going to have to remove them? That's exactly the intention here. And then the media can go and report about how the authoritarian dictator that is Donald Trump and Caroline Leavitt are throwing reporters and throwing journalists out of the White House press briefing room. This is the game plan. I am telegraphing right now exactly how something like this would unfold and shake out. That's exactly how this plays out. White House Correspondents Association leadership declined to comment, noting that Sunday's meeting had been off the record, and members of WHCA who spoke to Semaphore magazine emphasized that the situation remained in flux. On Fox News on Monday, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said the administration had tried to broker a meeting about the proposed seating changes and said that the briefing room does not belong to elitist journalists here in Washington. Well, I don't have any objection to that. I mean, do you believe that the White House press briefing room belongs to the New York Times? Do you believe that it belongs to the Washington Post? Do you believe that it belongs to ABC, NBC, and CBS? I don't think so. I believe it belongs to the American people. And if changes are going to be made to the structure in the White House press briefing room, I think that's fair. Again, nobody's talking about these individuals being kicked out. Nobody is mentioning that all of these outlets are just going to be tossed to the side and said, no more, you don't have access. It's just not what's happening at all. Actually, seems like it's quite the opposite. Trying to bring new media, trying to bring new organizations and new outlets into the fold, so those individuals can report to their incredibly large audiences, in some cases and sometimes tens of millions of listeners a week, bring those individuals the opportunity to report accurately as to what's going on in the White House. But that a bridge too far for the White House Correspondents Association. And it appears that they tried, say, wait, we tried to broker a meeting, and if I had to guess, WHCA wanted nothing to do with it. Asked about a potential protest by members of the White House Correspondents Association, including a potential sit-in, White House Communication Director Stephen Chung responded by just saying, ha, 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 over and over again. That was his response. And I think that's an accurate response. It's absurd. Now, Semaphore Magazine dives into the details. They say this: the move is part of a larger effort by the administration to take control of in-person access to the president and staff when at the White House. The White House has prohibited the Associated Press from covering in-person events over the wire services, refusal to follow Trump's executive orders to rename the Gulf of Mexico. Trump communication officials have also invited friendly reporters to cover events at which there is limited press access, allowing Trump to receive more positive questions and even some rhetorical backup during his comments. Well, so hold on a second here. The White House Correspondents Association, and I guess Semaphore.com, they have a problem with the Trump administration having friendly reporters and friendly media around? But are you guys just completely deranged? Do you guys have no understanding of the past? Did you not watch the last 4 years unfold in the White House press briefing room? Did you not watch the last 4 years unfold under Joe Biden? The entire press corps was carrying water for Joe Biden until that fateful day where he did his first debate with Donald Trump. Peter Ducey, God bless him and everything he does, was the only journalist in that White House press briefing room for 3 years that ever asked any tough, hard questions of that administration. Then once Joe Biden went up on stage and appeared to be literally crumbling apart, once Joe Biden proved what Republicans had been talking about for quite some time, the fact that Joe Biden was not mentally all there, was not mentally capable of continuing to be the president, then the media pounced, right? Then the media started saying, oh, you know, maybe there's some questions about Joe Biden's cognitive ability. Because at that point, they couldn't hide it. At that point, they had no choice but to report what was going on. Because tens of millions of Americans watched that first presidential debate. Tens of millions of Americans saw a guy that was seemingly looking into outer space when he was standing on the debate stage. Tens of millions of Americans saw a guy that couldn't put a sentence together. And so the smug nature of Semaphore in their writing of this, in the White House Correspondents Association, of he's got friendly journalists around, while the left follows around Democrat presidents like Joe Biden and carries their water for years, is the most laughable thing I've ever heard. The White House Correspondents Association has tried to push back against the White House's changes and raise awareness about the Trump administration efforts to roll back press access at the White House and the Pentagon. As Semaphore first noted last week, the White House Correspondents Association asked members to support the AP's press access case by wearing a First Amendment pin when attending events at the White House and appearing on television, a move that the White House officially mocked very quickly. In an email to members Monday morning, the White House Correspondents Association board said that the seating chart proposal was another sign that the White House was attempting to take power away from independent news organizations. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I do understand that today is April Fool's Day, and I promise you I'm not playing a joke on you. This is a real, legitimate article published yesterday by Semaphore.com. This is a real legitimate article. This is not the Babylon Bee. This is not the Onion. This is not some parody news outlet. Independent news organizations are having their power taken away. The White House had a freaking podcast room at the in the White House last week. They invited podcasters from all across the world to sit in at the White House and talk to individuals within the administration. You want to talk about independent news organizations? That's it. The likes of CBS and NBC and ABC and their far-left political bias, that's not independent news organizations. These media outlets have made their own problem here. Let me make this point as clearly as I can. The media has decided as a whole that they want to be a partisan branch of the Democrat Party. That's what they've decided to do. All of their reporting, all of their analysis skews towards the left. They carry water for the Democrats. And the result of that is they are no longer trusted by the vast majority of the American people. The public trust, according to Pew Research, in traditional media outlets is at all-time lows. And that's not the fault of the American people. That's not the fault of any administration. That's the fault of media organizations that have decided it is more important for them to carry water for the Democrats than report on what's actually happening. The media entities themselves have made those decisions. I didn't make those decisions. You didn't make those decisions. The Trump administration didn't make those decisions. Those outlets chose themselves that this was how they were going to portray themselves on the public stage. This was the kind of reporting or journalism, I'll throw in air quotes, that they were going to get into. They have shot themselves in the foot. They have decided that they were going to act in a very biased, partisan manner, and now they're dealing with the repercussions of it. And I have no sympathy. Actions have consequences. And the actions of these media outlets to not act as independent journalists, to not act as independent authorities of news and information, have put them in this position. I have no sympathy. If half of these individuals had their press credentials revoked, I wouldn't care in the least bit. They don't provide any useful information. I mean, if you don't believe me, go watch the nightly news on NBC. Go watch David Muir on ABC. And go watch these shows. There's no interest in them to promote accurate and factual information out of this administration. They have zero interest in that. So why am I supposed to care that they're now potentially having things shaken up in the White House press briefing room? You guys have decided to operate in this manner, and now you've got to pay the price for it. I'm not shedding any tears for legacy media this morning. The email that the White House Correspondents Association sent yesterday reads, quote, "If the White House pushes forward, it will become even more crystal clear that the administration is seeking to seize control of the system through which the independent press organizes itself, so that it is easier to enact punishment on outlets over their coverage." Still, while the White House Correspondents Association has struck a defiant public tone, the organization has already made some concessions that have pleased the White House. After initially tapping comedian Amber Rufin to perform at the White House Correspondents' annual dinner, the organization reversed course following complaints from the White House communication officials who criticized her comments on a Daily Beast podcast in which she described the new administration as a, quote, bunch of murderers. Oh, there you go. So, civil rights era sit-ins by mainstream media outlets because they're finally being called on their BS. They're finally being called on their out-of-control liberal partisan agenda. Guys, I don't have any sympathy for you. The American people don't have any sympathy for you. You have decided to act in this manner. You have decided that you were going to do nothing more than provide cover and coverage for the Democrats, cover for their awful liberal left-wing progressive ideals and ideology. And now you're being called on it. Now you're having to face the music and deal with the repercussions to your actions. If you don't want to be treated like this, then maybe it's time to get back to, oh, I don't know, news. Maybe it's time to get back to some semblance of journalistic integrity. But you don't have any of that. You're not interested in any of that. You get your talking points, you get your marching orders from the Democrat Party, and that's how the mainstream media operates. The American people have tuned it out, and now you're seeing an administration that's saying, to hell with you guys. If you don't want to report what's actually happening in the White House, even though you disagree with it, if you don't want to report what's actually happening in the White House, then you can take a seat somewhere else. We're going to bring other media outlets that have a vested interest in news. We're going to take other media outlets that have a vested interest in reporting on what's going on. We're going to bring those individuals to the front of the fold. We're going to bring those individuals to the front of the room. The outrage here and the sympathy that I'm supposed to feel for these media outlets is just absurd. We've got some texts coming in this morning at 910-377-6425. Heading on over to our text message line. Leslie is texting in from Wilmington this morning. She says, I hope that rude Caitlin Collins gets assigned to the back row. Agree, couldn't agree with you anymore, Leslie. It just goes to show you the way in which the media operates. They act like a bunch of clowns. They act like a bunch of partisan hacks for the Democrat Party and then cry foul when they're called on it. Cry foul when somebody says, you guys aren't journalists. You guys are partisan activists for the Democrat Party and you're going to be treated as such. You're going to be sent elsewhere in the White House press briefing room. You are not going to have unfettered access to this administration. If you want that, get back to being journalists. If you want that, get back to reporting the news. Maybe your viewership will come back. Maybe your advertisers will come back. This is their own making. The amount of sympathy I have for these media outlets in the White House Correspondents Association is literally nothing. I could not care less with how they think about this or how they feel. And props to the White House for inviting new media into the Oval Office and giving them access to the President of the United States. That's going to do it for a Tuesday edition of The Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and via podcast. We're back with you tomorrow morning. A big day for tariffs. We'll have the details coming up for you on a Wednesday edition of The Nick Craig Show.